Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Visit Pensacola Saints Coaches Show right here on the Saints Radio Network. It is our weekly visit with Saints head coach Darren Rizzi, brought to you by Visit Pensacola, the way to beach. Coach Rizzi, welcome to the show.
Hey, gentlemen, how you doing? Good to talk to you again.
Thank you, as always. You're a guy. You've said it a bunch. You know, you wear your emotions on your sleeve. What was today like for you? Talking to the team, Mickey, Mrs. Benson, I mean, just kind of what was it like for you emotionally?
Yeah, probably was a little bit more emotional after the game yesterday, Mike, than it was today. Today was a little bit more business-like. But, you know, it's always that last, very last day where that group, that team that in that locker room is going to be together for the last time. So it's always, there's going to be, moving parts every year. And so that's always an emotional day, just seeing everybody. But had some good conversations today with Mickey and everybody and all the players, and just a lot of hugs, a lot of support, and a lot of appreciation. So it was pretty cool.
Coach Rizzi, how the game unfolded yesterday, and I don't know how you when you evaluate what you're doing. You know, you want to play a complete game. You just can't play a great first half or vice versa, a great second half, and don't come out. But we came out against Tampa, a tribute to you and the staff and the players. You'd have to say that we dominated the first half. Look, the Saints scored on each of their first four possessions, each of which lasted at least 10 plays or more. You nearly doubled Tampa Bay's total in both yards and time of possession. So what happened in the second half and the adjustment? It was kind of almost deja vu, maybe kind of Raider-like. And then I look at Rattler. He went from like 103.5 pass rating in the first half to 46.5 in the second half. I mean, is that something you challenged your staff and all that? Why the momentum swing that drastic? Because we were taking it to Tampa Bay that first half.
Yeah, we sure were, Bobby, and that was a big emphasis all week because we had not started games well, as you guys know, and so our emphasis, all week leading up to the game was, man, that first quarter, that first drive on both sides, Tampa hadn't done well when the opponent had scored first. So, if you notice, we won the toss, took the ball on purpose, wanted to go down, and kind of, unfortunately they stopped us and held us to a field goal. We'd love to have a touchdown there. And then we did a good job defensively. We're off the field, and then we get the running into the punter penalty, unfortunately. And then, that gives them 3 points. But at the end of the day, really, that's all they did the whole first half offensively. But then we come out second half. They start with the ball, and we were unable to get off the field on third down. A couple of penalties mixed in there. They scored. We went 3 and out, and I really thought that's where the game – the momentum of the game switched in those first series on each side of the ball, in the second half. I mean, if you look at the first four possessions, offensively, we had double-digit possessions and scored points on the first four drives in the first half. And so and then you look at the second half, and we went, I think it was 3 plays, 4 plays, 5 plays. This just couldn't sustain the drive, couldn't stay on the field. So, one of our Achilles heel all year was third down, offensive third down. And I thought we did a really nice job in the first half of staying in some manageable down and distances, third down-wise. We had a couple of fourth down conversions on the long touchdown drive. But then the second half, I think we were 3rd and 9, 3rd and 7, and that's not really where we succeed and where we have success. So I think that's where the game flipped on us.
Coach Rizzi, I don't know, maybe you got an explanation, and I think maybe you didn't, but the officials, I don't know if they're talking to New York, who are they talking about, but then there was that was ridiculous. I don't know, you can't slash your throat, you can't shoot a gun and all that when you're trying to celebrate, but then, they got 1st and goal, I want to say it was the 9-yard line. And then it looked like a post-play penalty. So I was like, well, now it's 1st and goal from the 24. How can they be 1st and 10 from the 24? And how long that came about? That was ridiculous to me. Did you get any explanation on that?
Yeah, I definitely I definitely got a long explanation about three different times. I mean, not to make fun of it, but it got a little bit ridiculous. So apparently they called New York a couple different times. New York called down. You know, there's a couple different interpretations of the rules, so the fans understand if there's a post play foul 15 yarder that's immediate right after the play, then you mark it off and it's first and 10. If it's well after, I'm just kind of giving it in layman's terms. If it's a post, you know, dead ball way after the play, then it's, you know, you mark off 15. So, New York was trying to interpret it. Initially, they said first and goal, then they went back, said first and 10, they came back, said first and goal again. And then they eventually settled on first and 10. So that's what the holdup was. That's what the delay was. And so everybody understands. So, they're saying they got it right, but certainly took a long time to get it straightened out.
And, Coach, just to quickly follow up, people go, what does it matter? Jalen McMillan scored on the next play. Well, first and goal at the 32, by the way, it was at the 32, and first and 10 at the 32 are two different things from an offensive play-calling standpoint and a defensive standpoint. It is a big deal.
It's a big deal. Yeah, when you're defending first and goal to go from, you know, anywhere from, you know, beyond a 20-yard line, you're totally playing different defense, and you're obviously, you know, at that point, you're defending the goal line, you're not defending the sticks. And so I think, you know, when you're making your defensive play calls and you're defending that much ground, I don't want to say you're in a prevent, but, you know, for the fans, you're in a call that's going to, you know, not let them get, you know, any chunk plays, and you're not worried about giving up 7 or 8 yards in those situations. So yeah, totally changes the dynamic of the game for sure.
You know, Coach Rizzi, this is something I know, and you know, coaches, you've been part of staffs where it says, well, takeaways come in bunches. Obviously, you want to protect the football, but you want to take it away. And we were finally able to force a turnover. We had not done that the past 6 weeks. And we finally get a turnover. You know, we ended up minus two for the season, and we were plus one for the game. I mean, you've been around football long enough. Explain to the fans. I'm like, let me tell you, you know what's the big difference this year versus last year? And I still don't know how we didn't win double digits. Now, double digits should be a playoff team. Now, it didn't help Seattle, but every playoff team this year won double digits. And Seattle ended up being 10 wins and because of the tiebreaker, didn't get in. But just explain to the fans, like last year, I don't know, I've never witnessed this. We were a plus 11, and we were not in the postseason, where this year we ended up minus two for the season, where we started off hot, but not so much. We were plus one for the game, but just that one thing when you evaluate, and it does come in bunches, but if we ever get back like next year and you're going forward, and just look at all the teams, if you plus 10, plus 11, that could take you a long way to being in the postseason.
Yeah, Bobby, it's for the fans. It's definitely the number one indicator in our league for success for individual games. You know, if you're plus one, plus two, plus three on the turnover ratio, your odds of winning go up dramatically. Your chances of winning go up dramatically. I mean, if you're plus three, I think in a game you're like a 90% chances of winning, and then obviously that carries over for the season. If you look year in and year out, you can take the last 20, 30, however many years you want to take. If you look at the teams that make the postseason, same thing. There's a dramatic difference there in the teams that are in the plus column on the turnover ratio. So it is by far the number one stat in football is a turnover takeaway. I like to call it the great equalizer, because you can give up some yards in a game, but if you get three or four turnovers or takeaways, it's a big deal. By the same token, you can go ahead and rush and pass for all these yards, but if you turn the ball over, you know, then it's going to be a detriment. So, yeah, I totally agree. And so that's something we emphasize all the time. It's something that we did really well early in the year, take the ball away. We didn't do it quite as well here in the end of the year. But we did get one yesterday. But I would agree that it's the number one stat in football by far.
Need to take a quick break. This is the Visit Pensacola Saints Coaches Show on the Saints Radio Network. Back with Coach Darren Rizzi and Bobby Hebert after this. Welcome back. the Visit Pensacola Saints Coaches Show here on the Saints Radio Network. Our weekly visit with Saints head coach Darren Rizzi, brought to you by Visit Pensacola, the way to beach. Any question about whether your team would come out and play with fire and heart answered early in this game, especially with the way you played the entire first half. Second half, man, it just felt like the, not the discipline, but the emotions of some of the plays got away from them. Couple of unnecessary roughness, one face mask, one unsportsmanlike conduct, and that's all in the second half. And it's not the number of penalties, it's kind of what they take away, and that must have been tough.
Yeah, I think there was a couple on that first drive. We had the face mask, their first drive. In the second half, we had a face mask. We had the illegal hit to the head neck area on Honey Badger, both in the same drive, and then, you know, we had that unsportsmanlike conduct on Foster on their sideline. You know, I didn't get a great look at it during the game. I saw some of the replays. I mean, I get it, but, you know, it is what it is. And then, you know, the one at the end on Shep, Nathan Shepard, where he's there, they say he's playing after the whistle. So, yeah, listen, that's 60 yards. And we give up 60 yards in penalties there on just four plays. You know, you're gonna get stung there on the scoreboard, and that's what happened. But I think bigger than that, you know, for the second half was, you know, listen, they scored three touchdown drives. They kind of stopped us in the first half to some field goal drives. They were able to cash in the red zone and on some third downs. And it was really just situational football. Baker Mayfield made some plays with his feet. And that's, you know, ultimately what the game came down to.
Now, Coach Rizzi, you bring up Baker Mayfield making plays with his feet. And fans asked me, I said, I don't know. It's the same song and dance. I don't know. We don't stop running quarterbacks. We have not all year, and even in previous seasons. It seems like that's been our Achilles heel. And you might say, well, we give up 5 yards a run on the season, 4.95 yards, and quarterback runs do count. Well, we ended up, we all know what happened in the Raider game. Then you look at Tampa Bay. They average 5.8 yards a carry, around 179. So I don't know. What is it like? You know, you can have a scrambling quarterback. They can maybe scramble to extend the play and really want to pass, or you take off and run. But I don't know if any time, well, I know we sacked Jane Daniels 8 times, but then he had that one big run about 28 yards, whatever. But it seems like we've always struggled against quarterbacks, and I'd always take the over. Whatever the over and under is as far as their running ability. But we've struggled that, and that's one thing to me. I don't know if you might want to address it, but it didn't happen. I know you can't give up 5 yards a run in the NFL because teams, I can guarantee you that the very first game next year, they're going to see the Saints copycat lead. They're going to see if the Saints can stop the run, or are we still hovering around giving up 5 yards a carry?
Yeah, well, let's start with the yards per carry, Bobby. I agree. If you looked at us, just take a kind of a step back and look at us overall defensively for the season, in my opinion, that's the thing that's got to get corrected the most is our run defense, because that's where it all starts. You know, if teams can do that and they're able to successfully run the football in this league, you know, for as long as this league's been going, those are the teams that are going to be playing at the end of the year. Teams that can run the football and have success running the football and giving up, you know, 5 yards to carry is not really, certainly not our goal. We want to be down, you know, at the under the four mark. And so that may be the number one thing we got to clean up the most on defense. Number two, you know, you mentioned the quarterback scrambles. I'm going to have to agree with you. Unfortunately, it's something that, you know, there's about 4 or 5 games you look at on the season where that was really a determining factor in some teams. And it was a lot of the times where, you know, we had teams in third and medium, third and long, and we had good coverage. And then we just couldn't, you know, either get the quarterback sacked in the pocket, or the quarterback broke contain, or the quarterback, you know, we didn't have a second-level defender able to get him on the ground. And ironically enough, one of the games we did the best job in was probably the Washington game, where we had a really good plan. You know, he definitely made a play or two, but certainly not to the extent he has done in some other games. And I'm talking about Jaden Daniels. But, yeah, listen, Baker Mayfield was the X factor yesterday. It's hard to sit here and say that, but he was. Those plays he made, scrambling and the plays that he extended, you know, you look at the touchdown he threw the first drive of the second half, and then the second touchdown that he threw in the corner on their sideline in the end zone. Those are two plays that got extended for a long time that he was able to make with his feet. So it's something that, you always look back in the offseason. You've been a part of a bunch of offseasons, Bobby. You look back, and that's going to be two of the things that we've got to really focus on moving forward in the future on defense for sure.
So, Coach, got to ask you about the Mike Evans play. I know you probably talked about it, but, I mean, first off, let's put out the obvious in that it's third and five at the Tampa 32. You're driving. It's 47 seconds left. Still got a timeout. So you got two plays. With 47 seconds, good chance you get the first down. Mike Evans doesn't see the field again. You may tie the game. Who knows? No, then he would be in overtime. But, I mean, the third and five, the incomplete to Holker, then the incomplete to Cedric. They even have the chance, but it's not like you're planning. Well, you answer. Tell us about the Mike Evans situation.
Yeah. Well, first of all,
rather than me answer for you.
No, that's okay. Well, listen, if we go down there and we convert on those, then we're not even talking about this, like you said. So it starts with us. We especially the fourth down play. I thought Cedric. That ball, just bad timing on the route, but I mean, he's open and the ball's there a little bit early and a little bit high and we don't convert. So, that's that. Listen, we all knew going into the game, we were very, very aware. We had heightened awareness on what exactly Mike Evans needed for the records and the incentives. And believe me, it was a focal point all week long. We knew exactly where the ball was going. We knew he was going to be double digit targets. We had a plan for it. I mean, all those things. So rest assured, I could tell you that was a major focus going into the game. As far as the last play of the game is concerned, I was standing right there next to Joe Woods. I heard him call the defense. We had a call, where we double Evans wherever he's lined up. We didn't get lined up correctly. I was about to call timeout. Quite frankly, I didn't get it off in time. I just went to step on the field to call timeout, to see him doubled. I didn't want to see him get the record against us. And then, listen, you guys know how competitive I am. The last thing I wanted was him to get that record on our watch. And so just to miss that there and a misalignment, unfortunately. But, I mean, everybody in the stadium, everybody watching the game, and everybody on the sideline knew where the ball was going there. We had a misalignment with our defense. It's just unfortunate and clear-cut.
Need to take a quick break. Mike Haas, Saints head coach Darren Rizzi, and Bobby Hebert, the Cajun Cannon, back with more of the Visit Pensacola Saints Coaches Show, brought to you by Caesars Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the New Orleans Saints. Back after this. Welcome back. It is the Visit Pensacola Saints Coaches Show here on the Saints Radio Network, and our talk with Saints head coach Darren Rizzi is brought to you by Visit Pensacola, the way to beat. So, Coach, if I've got it right, you'll spend the rest of this week, you say goodbye to the players, and you talk briefly with Mickey and Miss Gale, and then you'll have an official interview next week. What is that like? Is it just a conversation? Do you let, the final eight games, or do you come up with like a plan? Like, here's, because I think you said today, hey, change is needed here. How much, left to be determined, but do you walk in like maybe not a PowerPoint, but do you say, like, here's what I would do, or you just kind of talk about, what you did?
Yeah, I think what I've done and what I've, did since I've taken over is kind of self-explanatory. I think I'm a lot different than a lot of the other candidates that are going to interview, because there's not really any guesswork involved with, how I'm going to lead a meeting or how I'm going to lead a practice or how I'm going to lead the team or, how I'm going to be on the sideline, game management, all that stuff. I think the big thing, Mike, is just the plan going forward with, some major decisions. Number one, starting with the coaching staff, got to go in there with a plan on, what the coaching staff would look like if we're going to make any changes. If I feel like the coaching staff, needs some, maneuvering and changes. Number two, with the roster, just, there's going to be some big decisions here moving forward on some players, on both sides of the ball, naturally, like there is every year. I think that, obviously Mickey and the committee is going to want to hear my opinion on a lot of those guys. And so I think a lot of it'll be staff. I think a lot of it'll be, the roster. And then listen, the bottom line is I took over obviously in the middle of the season. And so although I did a lot of things my own way, I couldn't do everything, because we're right in the middle of the journey and, we're not going to change, wholesale, schematically or all that stuff. So naturally, We'll discuss the off season, you know, what the off season would look like under my leadership, you know, what we would do during the OTAs, what we would do during training camp, beginning of the season, you know, things that they haven't been or haven't seen, you know, us do or me do during my interim here as a head coach. So I think a lot of it will be about that. It's certainly not going to be about my background and my personality. And, you know, I think some of those things are clear cut. And listen, I think a lot of it, a lot of the leadership things, there's some really good things that we got done. The locker room is great. All that stuff that, you know, it's kind of been well documented. And so I think a lot of it will be just kind of about the plan moving forward.
Now, you know, Coach Rizzi, you talked about the roster and, you know, you got to get younger. It's just the nature of the NFL. And we're one of the older teams in the NFL. You can be old as long as you win. But if you're not winning, you're not in the postseason, then that can be a problem.
Yeah.
And then I look at the roster. I don't know. It's just, I don't know, a beauty contest or whatever. It's like, who's in the Pro Bowl? Who's not in the Pro Bowl? Who's all pro? I mean, to me, that's a travesty. JT Gray, to me, he's not only a Pro Bowl. I think he's all pro. Led the NFL in tackles. You look, I didn't want to say at 26, he blocks a kick. So when you look at the roster, and I just say, okay, you can have good or very good players. I look wherever you say, I don't know, 26, 27, 28, and younger. Okay, who's truly elite? Who wants your players? Like, I look at McCoy. Okay, I think, I don't know, he could start off at, if not at center, at guard probably on every team. But then you look at a lot of other young players, they're good, they're NFL players, but I'm talking about who's elite. And I think that's where the Saints are missing right now, that we don't have a lot of elite young players. I'm talking about the best of the best. And I don't know, they had a Pro Bowl vote, and we didn't have nobody even make it. Now, I know it goes by when you don't win, but I was on a 500 team in Atlanta, and we had three guys in the Pro Bowl. So, I mean, so you might say, well, no, you have to win. No, it's just a perception right now that the Saints really don't have what the league looks at, even the competition, as elite players overall.
Yeah, Bobby, I think there's a couple factors there. I think number one, I don't think this is a big going to be, you know, earth-shattering news, but a lot of our best players got hurt and didn't play complete seasons, and a lot of times, as you know, that hurts your, you know, your chances for, you know, making some of those accolades, Pro Bowl, All Pro, all that. I mean, listen, in my opinion, Eric McCoy is one of the best centers in football. And in my opinion, there's a guy that's going to be a Pro Bowler and get All Pro votes if he stays healthy. Naturally, we lost Taysom. You know, Alvin obviously, you know, missed considerable time. Rashid Shaheed, who was a Pro Bowler last year, he gets hurt. I wholeheartedly agree with you that it's a travesty with JT. I mean, JT should be first team All Pro, and, you know, and really got stubbed for the Pro Bowl. So I think there's some, you know, there's certainly the talents there. I think Alante Taylor was having a Pro Bowl type season as an inside nickel, and for the betterment of the team, he had to move outside for the second half of the year, and that might have hurt his chances a little bit. You know, Paulson Adebo, another guy that was, you know, on track, a bunch of interceptions, was on track to having a real good, productive kind of Pro Bowl year. You know, he goes down. And so, listen, we never made any excuses, and we never let the excuses, you know, factor in with our results. And but I do think from a personal side of things, I do think that did affect, you know, some of the accolades. You know, as far as the age of the roster, I think we kind of have a unique blend, to be honest with you. There are a number of our marquee players and the well household names have gotten older, but we did play a lot of young guys this year. I mean, you look at Tally Fuaga, you know, our starting left tackle, really rarely got talked about all year, which is a credit to him because he played, had a real solid season. There were a lot of younger guys that stepped up and had to play for us. You know, you look at Kool-Aid and you look at, you know, obviously Spencer had to play a bunch of snaps. And, you know, there's a lot of younger guys that got mixed, you know, thrown into the mix. So, like I said, we'll sit down and evaluate all that. I think that's certainly part of the plan moving forward, is to kind of see what we need to make. But as both you guys know, one of the biggest things we have to do and figure out is just a better way to stay healthy next season and give us the best chance to win.
Well, Coach, tough times. You've been a stand-up guy for Bobby and myself. Mike Dettillier talked about it earlier. Appreciate your honesty, you know, everything, all of your emotion. Not every coach would show up tonight for the show, given the situation. You did, and we appreciate it.
You know, Coach Rizzi, we appreciate you, but I can tell you right now, I don't know if you're going to be a head coach, but I know you're one of the best special teams coach in the NFL, and you can make a great living, I know, for 20 or 30 years. So I ain't going to feel sorry for you, because I know you're in great shape going forward.
Well, I'll tell you what, both you guys, I really appreciate your support, and you know how passionate I am about the Saints, and hey, Things will happen for a reason, as they always do. I hope I'm here, and I appreciate the kind words, and I appreciate your guys' honesty as well every week and your passion and your hard work. So thank you very much.
You got it, my friend. Thank you to Saints coach Darren Rizzi. Let's pause 10 seconds to let stations identify themselves here on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. When we come back, we will talk with Saints assistant coach Peter Genta, the senior defensive assistant, 33 years of NFL experience and 3 Super Bowls. Back with more here on the Visit Pensacola Saints Coaches Show on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. Welcome back, and now we'll go behind the scenes with the Saints assistant coach, brought to you by Rouse's Markets. Shop Rouse's, the official supermarket of the Saints, and Peter Genta, 33 years of NFL experience and senior defensive assistant. Coach, welcome to the show.
Mike, Bobby, thanks very much for having me.
So 31 teams will finish and clean out their lockers, you know, kind of looking to the offseason. Only one will get to be that Super Bowl champion. You've been around the league a long time. You've won 3 Super Bowls, but most teams do what the Saints did today, right? It's kind of a goodbye, and, you know, but with the uncertain future, I would imagine this day, irrespective, unless you're the Super Bowl champ, is always a very tough day.
It certainly is. It's a whole lot nicer than it was the way we finished the season last year with a big win. When you go out in the kind of disappointing note the way we did, you know, having a tough loss down in Tampa, it makes it a little tougher off season. Sometimes, you know, reality is good, and, you know, it sets in and makes you really, you know, think about what you need to do to improve, to get better, and really do a great job of, you know, looking back and reflecting on the season and on the last game and making, you know, good choices in the offseason.
Now, Peter, in your viewpoint, all the football you've witnessed, how can we fall so far? Because I thought, you know, we can have middle-of-the-pack offense and be outstanding on special teams, but our defense has to be hovering around, if not top 10, like top 12, but somewhere around there. To me, I was more disappointed. You can look at the injuries, but the injuries were more on the offensive side. Now, we had some on the defense, but all of a sudden, total defense, we ranked not last, or one before last, but 30th. Then we 28 against the run, 27 against the pass. What do you attribute that to, the big slide, compared to previous seasons, when we would take a lot of pride in where our defense was ranked amongst the tops in the NFL?
Yeah, we take a lot of pride in how we rank, Bob, and, you know, do everything we can to get that ranking in the top 10 and the top 5. And, you know, they spent a lot of time in the offseason talking about and trying to get better and improve ourselves in those areas. And unfortunately, this season, you know, we gave up too many big plays. And, at times we had games at hand and we let things get away, and our third down defense wasn't what it needed to be. And, you know, we miss a third down, and it goes for 13 more plays in a drive, or 10 more plays in a drive, and our inability to get off on third down really hurt us in a lot of the other areas as far as the run game and the pass game. And those are critical to your success, is being able to do that, you know, and certainly, you know, the injuries, you know, are part of the game, and it happened, you know, and Olathe was doing a great job as our nickel when he had to go back outside, you know, Ugo went inside, you know, a lot of different moving parts, you know, a linebacker gets, it affects the way you are able to play certain defenses. And, you know, the guys stepped up and did their best, worked their asses off, and, and, you know, really competed every down. No problem with their effort. We just didn't execute the way we should have.
Now, Peter, now the one thing I look at, and we wanted to get better. I'm going back old school now. Old school, what I mean, like David Onyemata, Sheldon Rankins, and all that. where we were not only in the top five, we were probably like number three or somewhere in that range. And now, I don't know, it seems like, do we really, I know you can't pay everybody, but I look at Colin Sanders, I'm not Nate Shepard, I'm not calling them out. I'm looking at Brian Brzee's outstanding pass rusher, but playing the run, you can't give up no 5 yards a run. And it happens every game. That's just an average. Like, for instance, in the quarterback runs count, they got Tampa Bay average 5.8. But to me, that's one area. I don't know who we drafted, but we got to get better right up the gut stopping the run. And the D-tackle position, we might have changed things, but we did not get better in that area, losing like a Sheldon Rankins, Onyemata, and all those pass guys. Where it seems like about, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, we were outstanding. Well, we ain't outstanding no more stopping the run.
No, unfortunately, we weren't. You know, we lost some really good players, like you mentioned, guys that had stepped up and done a really good job you developing. Unfortunately, in this day and age, the way the salary cap is, you can't keep everybody. And, you know, Ryan left and went to Atlanta and took David with him, took Caden Ellis with him, you know, Zach Bond left. We had a number of good players leave the organization. And I guess it's just unfortunate that, you know, the salary cap and trying to keep the guys you'd like to keep, you know, we'd love to keep a lot of those guys, but just unfortunately we were unable to do that. You know, the other guys stepped in and, you know, it's a transition getting to learn to play the style you want to play. And, you know, went through a couple of different guys at the defensive tackle spot. And, you know, unfortunately our run defense wasn't what it had been in the past.
So, Coach, you have a reputation. You've been in the league a long time for getting the most out of DBs. You know, Ugo Amadi, right? So he had 7 tackles, 1 tackle for a loss yesterday. In the last 8 games, he's had 57 tackles. Also, like Will Harris, kind of, and maybe if you want to talk about Kool-Aid and how he has progressed, just talk about those guys who've kind of come on in the back end of this season.
Ugo had done a tremendous job for us. He started off the season on the practice squad, got here elevated to the regular roster, and he just did a fantastic job. He did the same thing last year for us when we needed him. He's a smart, tough young man, really does a great job preparing himself, you know, to get ready to play. He likes getting in the mix, you know, in the run game, you know, makes tackles downfield in the pass game when he has to. He's just a really tremendous young man and done a great job for us stepping in and filling the role that Alante played as starting nickel. And then Will Harris was a great addition for us from Detroit. You know, I had a pleasure of working Will out when he came out at BC, and I was hoping we could draft him here, but didn't work out. But fortunately, 4 years later, we got him as a free agent. He was a tone setter on defense, was a big hitter, played the ball well. We used him a lot up as part of the front, and he did a really good job up there. You know, unfortunately, he's a, you know, unrestricted free agent. Love to get him back if they can. It just, we'll have to see, wait and see on that one, because he did step up and play well. You know, Kool-Aid, unfortunately for him, you know, coming in off of a knee injury at the end of his college year and, you know, doing mostly rehab in the off season, missed the organized team activities. The mini camp wasn't able to participate, just watch, and then kind of limited in training camp, you know, getting him back into condition football wise, and then competing with Marshawn, Alante, and Paulson Adebo. He didn't get as many reps you should, but, you know, he stepped up and did some good. It was a learning experience for him this year, a lot of growth. He'll have some growing to do in this offseason, but the great thing about it, he comes out of the season healthy. He'll be able to train now and not rehab this offseason, so that'll be good. He'll be able to get in with the OTAs. He'll be able to get in a minicamp. He'll be able to get all those offseason things that'll help him become a really good, solid player. And one of the guys that you know, people don't talk about, Rico Payton, did a really good job, especially on special teams, but undrafted, you know, free agent out of Pittsburgh State in Kansas. He did a tremendous job, you know, on the scout team and doing, you know, things in practice to get himself ready to play if we needed him. He played a couple of few snaps during the season. You know, he's got a good future for us as a corner as well. He stepped up and was ready to play when we needed him to, and made a really good contribution for Coach Rizzi and Coach Galliano on special teams. So, you know, there's some good young defensive backs here that have a good future.
And you know, Peter, well, you're reading my mind, because I always love those success stories. Rico Payton, to me, Pittsburgh State, when you think, Pittsburgh State. No, it's not in Pennsylvania. It's in Kansas. People don't even know where that's even at. But Rico Payton, that to me was unbelievable. You talk about his contribution on special teams and given the opportunity in the preseason and preseason games, he ended up with 13 total special teams tackles, 10 unassisted. So, yeah, you always see those success stories out there. So that has to be real rewarding when you see those kind of players stepping up and taking advantage of opportunity no matter where they come from.
Oh, it certainly is. He did a tremendous, tremendous job. You know, we brought him in here on one of those visits to meet him, talk to him, and really liked everything about the young man. And like you said, he came in and took advantage of his opportunity and ended up competing through training camp and winning a roster spot. And he was a really pleasant surprise all year for the guys on special teams and for us on defense. He has some growing to do as a corner, but he'll do that.
Well, Coach, as always, we appreciate your time. Thanks for tonight. I know, you know, the future is the future. We'll see where things go, but thanks for joining us tonight.
No, thank you very much, Mike. Bobby, thanks for having me on. You guys have been great. The 8 years I've been here have been tremendous. I can't thank the fans of New Orleans enough. And, you know, the Saints organization is a great place to be. And I just wish we could have brought a little better end to the season for you guys.
You bet, my friend. Thank you. Peter Ginta, Senior Defensive Assistant. We'll say goodbye to Bobby for the night as well. Bobby, as always, enjoyed it, my friend.
All right, Hoss. Yeah, it was. I wish it would have been a more rewarding season, but we love football. And hopefully now they'll be asking you and I, who the Saints are going to draft? Who are they going to draft? That's all we're going to hear now. Hit the wave. Well, that's a good thing. This shows some interest year-round with the New Orleans Football Saints.
Time to take a break. Back after this on the Visit Pensacola Saints Coaches Show here on the Saints Radio Network. Welcome back. Now it's time to have a Bud Light with Mike Dettelier. Drink Bud Light, the official beer of the Saints. Mike, we just heard from talk to Bobby and, of course, Darren Rizzi and Peter Ginta. And Bobby's like, he's right. You know, we're going to face all these. Who are they going to draft? Who are they going to draft? Well, kind of. But first things first, get a head coach.
Yeah, no question about it. That's going to be the first agenda. And we're going to have as big a offseason as we will during the season because you're going to have to make a lot of moves, Mike. And some of them not going to be popular, but you got to swallow it. And you got to understand, you got to dig your way out of this salary cap situation that you put yourself in. And so, head coach, you're going to see a lot of assistant coaches get looked at, and we'll see what happens and, you know, how it all shakes out, because you can sort of see the table sort of set. When New England fired Gerard Mayo, I just knew exactly where they were headed with that, with Mike Vrabel, because of his past connections to the Patriots organization. And again, boy, if Aaron Glenn wanted something on the resume, he got it last night, didn't he?
Yeah, it's written down. Mike, Detroit defense, Aaron Glenn with the world to see. It's just because there was so much emphasis on that game, and that was a playoff game before the playoffs.
Yeah, and, you know, I was so proud, you know, because I watched Amik Robertson. He's from Thibodaux High School on the Bayou, and I've said this before, he's one of the best high school football players I've ever seen from the Bayou. And, you know, he's 5'8" and a little change. And he became an All-American at Louisiana Tech, got picked in the fourth round by the Raiders. It never seemed to be a good fit. He goes to the Lions, and I know he's about grit and toughness and heart, and he's talented. He was a nickel corner, but because of the injuries, they had to put him out on the edge. And first time I ever met Amik and Justin Jefferson, they were training at Camp Mula in Houma. Workout facility. They've been training against one another for years, and yet you saw it on display. It was Jefferson going up against Amik last night, and he held him to 3 catches. And so, man, think about those two guys from the Bayou and the River Parish and how they made it in the league.
So we are about to have, and we, you know, wish we were a bigger part of it, an unbelievable Thursday to Monday weekend of football, college football playoffs Thursday, Friday, and then, of course, wild card weekend. Kind of as you look at this, you know, wild card, the playoff teams, what's the one team in the AFC you don't want to play right now?
Man, it's still Kansas City. Mike, I'm telling you, until you got to beat the man, okay, is the Ric Flair line. To beat a man, you got to beat the man. And they still in that category that you do not want to see them on that schedule. In the NFC, the intriguing team for me, and I don't know how this is all going to shake out, is Philly. Because talent-wise, Mike, they got a lot of talent. Now, how far will Nick Sirianni take this team? Now, he did lead them to a Super Bowl one year, but he had two great coordinators that year, too, now head coaches in the NFL. But if you look at pure talent, they're the only team in the NFC that I think can match Detroit. And especially a Detroit team today that has all these injuries. It's Philly. And they play a physical brand of football that they can match up against Detroit. One-on-one, one game, winner-take-all type of situation. So, man, Philly would be that team. And in the AFC, and it's still the Chiefs until you knock them out.
And the thing about Philly, you know, as we have been challenged with the Saints defense and the inability to stop the run, and you see that defensive interior from Philly with Carter, you know, the Georgia Bulldogs. I mean, that game just shows you the difference sometimes, not necessarily in the Saints, but the difference of how far Philly is in that category, like the ability to stop the run.
Yeah, you know, Carter and Davis, you know, and you put them on the scale together, you well over 600 pounds with those two guys. And what's amazing for both of them is how well they move for big men, especially Carter. I mean, he's sort of a freak of nature. And, man, I talked to Pete Jenkins about him so many times. Pete has worked with the Georgia football team and with Kirby Smart and their defensive linemen. He told me, Mike, I ain't seen too many like him. He said, matter of fact, I've seen very few like what Jalen Carter can do when he wants to. And he would always emphasize when he wants to. Now, Davis is a huge man. He's like a big mountain. And limited amount of plays, but when he's in there, he's hard to move off the snap. And they create openings for the linebackers. And you look at what the numbers, N'Kobe Dean, Zach Bond was able to do. Man, a lot of times they had a free run at the running back because of those guys. They were occupying multiple blockers, and now I go one-on-one with a running back. Man, that really helps. And you're right. That game, I think, showed the difference defensive line-wise between the Saints and the Eagles.
Well, Mike, as always, my friend, you are awesome. Thanks to you and Bobby for being with us all year here on the Visit Pensacola Saints Coaches Show. Mike and Bobby, of course, at the Silver Slipper Casino in Hancock County, Mississippi. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you, Hoss.
I want to thank everybody for helping out with the show this year. Charlie Long, as always, in the booth. Thanks for listening. The Saints draft, they have 8 picks right now. Got a couple from Washington. We'll see if they get any more. The draft this year is in Green Bay, Wisconsin. We'll see if the Saints are ready. They have the 9th pick right now, 2nd, 3rd, 2 and a 3rd, 2 and the 4th, 1 and the 6th, and 1 and the 7th. Again, thank you, everybody, for listening to the Saints Coaches Show here on the Visit Pensacola Saints Coaches Show on the Saints Radio Network. Good night, everyone.